This week's PC Gamer Show. I'm Evan Lotta, your host. Our usual host, Tom Marks, is visiting Blizzard this week, so I'm stepping in. Glad to be here with my buddies Tyler and James.
Hey.
How's it going, guys?
Good. Good.
Great. So, as our topics list will be populating soon on the stream, there it is. Wow.
Oh, so
animation.
Fancy.
The future. As you can see there, we're going to be talking about what we're playing, Star Wars Battlefront, Star Citizen, the Star Citizen cast announcement. Ooh. This interesting little Half-Life 3.txt, not rumor, but like file that was discovered,
yeah.
What that means, a game called Brigador that Tyler and I have been checking out that we're very excited about, very interested in. So yeah, plenty of stuff to talk about in the month before the storm, as we're calling it here at PC Gamer, the month before stuff like Battlefront's officially released, Fallout 4 obviously, and much more.
Oh, how are we going to do it?
In the holiday season.
Yeah.
We survived this long. I've been here for 7 years.
Yeah, we can do it.
And I still have most of my bones.
This is my first storm, guys.
As
I'm
I keep
scared.
Saying, it cleared out a bit. XCOM 2 was going to be out.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm kind of glad it's not.
Yeah, Rainbow Six got pushed to December from October.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got Fallout 4 to play, which is probably every show.
All hands on deck for that.
Oh, my gosh. Fallout.
We'll have lots of stories, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be... I just love those moments where everybody's discovering the game at the same time. I think we had this as a debate article maybe a year or more ago, just talking about how it does matter when you play games.
Sure, like
it fundamentally changes your experience, that ability to sort of be part of the conversation and avoid spoilers and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely a believer in the idea that if you wait 6 months, you're going to get a game that's less buggy. Probably has, like, there was just a huge Witcher 3 patch that, like, fixes stuff, added
like
dialogue.
15 gigs or something.
Like, you're going to get a better game 6 months later, probably maybe even cheaper if a sale happens. But, like, I wasn't going to wait 6 months to play Mass Effect 3 and, like, be a part of the conversation, even when it was kind of an angry conversation. Like, that was a valuable part of it.
Yeah.
So, it's tricky.
Let's talk about what we're playing right now. Tyler, you've been digging into Minecraft Story Mode Telltale. This is the latest Telltale game, of course, and it's not Minecraft in the sense that it's not a sandbox game. It's still a Telltale-style adventure game like The Walking Dead. I had a chance to play it at PAX back in September, but what are you thinking of it? You're starting from scratch here.
Yeah, I just played through. I just finished the first episode, which released today. I didn't like it. Unfortunately.
How can you not like Minecraft, Tyler?
What's wrong with you?
Minecraft is perfect.
To be clear, it's definitely a telltale game with Minecraft sort of flavor, you know. It's in a Minecraft world. I've liked every Telltale game, like Walking Dead and after. I love Tales from the Borderlands. I think it's really
amazing.
Funny.
Yeah, you were super high on that,
I thought... The Wolf Among Us was good, not as good. I kind of got less interested in The Walking Dead over time because, I don't know, the zombie stuff is just not, doesn't do it for me.
It is pretty tropey in the sense that, like, it stops being surprising. I mean, it's just like a show where, like, oh, and then zombies. Like, that's such a
screwdrivers, some heads,
overused device.
Someone's going to die
to create peril.
So... Yeah. I mean, I've played Minecraft a fair amount. I'm not like, you know, a millionaire YouTuber or anything. But I like Minecraft.
Be.
And I like the way it looks. I think even unmodified Minecraft, even if you don't have a texture pack or anything, like has a certain beauty to
it. It's like a Zen garden kind of.
When you look out on a huge vista. Yeah. But this game, Story Mode, is just so constantly zoomed in on these like really ugly characters and textures that it was like almost... hard to look at for a full like hour and a half or 2 hours or however long it took me. Like, it's just ugly. Like, I think you said when we were talking about it, if this weren't Minecraft and we didn't know what Minecraft looks like, we would just be like, why did someone make a game look like this? Like, it looks really bad. And then on top of that, like, I didn't find the humor very funny, and I know it is kind of directed at a younger audience,
right?
But it's not like I don't enjoy things directed at younger audiences.
But, I mean, there's been so many great work, or so much great work over the past 5 or 10 years. Pixar is like the standout, obviously, of great, like accessible all ages stuff. The Lego Movie was amazing.
A lot of cartoons, Adventure Time, and Steven Universe, and all those things.
There were like one or two jokes that I like almost sort of chuckled at. Like, it's really trying to rely on the personality of its characters being like, oh, you know, this one's kind of brash and silly, but it all just came off to me as sort of generic kids adventure stuff where it's...
Well, that's something they were really amping up, where they have some... Like, Patton Oswalt. Like Corey Feldman's in the cast.
Corey
like
Feldman.
They're really playing up the fact that it's like similar to the Goonies in its spirit.
Yeah.
And do you get that?
Yeah, I guess. And the voice acting is good, to be clear. I mean, but when it's kind of coming out of this like mouth that's just like, you know, 5 pixels of mouth, and I didn't feel anything, you know, for these characters. So like decisions that are supposed to be like, do you save this person? It's very much the Telltale formula, by the way. Nothing has changed there. It's awkward to walk around.
Yeah.
There's kind of combat in the sense that you like click at the right time.
No, I played that moment in the PAX demo where it's like,
who do you save?
Two people are in peril directly in
Slow-mo.
Front of you, and I have to rotate my camera like 20 degrees left or right to pick them.
Yeah, the trend seems to be that like the better the Telltale game, if Telltale game's well received, it's because it's written well, or at least looks cool in a combo. And this one, it's not.
It just seems weird to. I mean, Minecraft is such a unique game. Obviously, it's tough to represent sandbox stuff in a linear or even branching format, but. To pull that trope in particular, where like, okay, in episode one, somebody dies.
Yeah.
That seems super bizarre. Or maybe they don't die. Maybe, you know, who knows what happens to them.
But deconstructed.
But to give you that character choice between A or B, again, it just feels like I mean, not to criticize Telltale, I'm really happy that they've been able to grow as a company and like take on these new brands or whatever, but surely there are original ideas you can pursue other than that.
Yeah.
In this context, where Minecraft is this rich, rich opportunity for bringing in like everything from references to like popular mods to building and you know, teamwork and creativity, and
they do their best. Like, it starts out, you and your group of friends are joining a building competition, and like you get the chance to make a decision about what you're going to build. The actual building of it is like, you know, press Q a bunch of times, and they do kind of a high speed sort of stop motion building. Kind of montage. Like, it's cute, and there's cute stuff where you get like a crafting table and you look at a recipe and you have to craft like you would in Minecraft, but you know, that's just kind of nominal interactivity where it's just sort of like put the things on the table. Well, someone off camera says, come on, you know how to do this, if you take too long, you know, and then just kind of like prods you, just put the items on the crafting table. Okay, I did that. I made like a bow and arrow, and now I can click on the thing that I need to shoot, and then I shoot it. And, you know, I didn't expect it to be Minecraft and have that freedom. I knew it was a Telltale adventure game, but it just doesn't, to me, like, there are so many jokes. Like, Borderlands makes some, I thought, pretty amusing jokes about Borderlands where you just kind of find loot crates, and it's, they kind of laugh at themselves, but I don't know. I didn't feel like there was a whole lot of humor to be found here. It really felt like I was watching kind of one of the lower tier like kids adventure cartoons where you just have like, I don't know, slightly zany characters who could be any kid, Joe any kid, like I don't know. I don't want to say I hate it or anything. I just Telltale is very good at telling tales. It started coming out before I realized it was happening.
It's okay. It's in your DNA.
And this just didn't feel very... I mean, I'll keep playing it personally because that is my job, to keep playing it. But also, you know, I'd like to see it get more interesting, but it's very much a, you know, world in peril and unlikely team of kids now must save it. Whereas what I love about Borderlands is it's like, if the world is in peril, like, no one really even cares. Everyone has selfish motivations. And then what I liked about The Wolf Among Us is, again, it's just sort of, like, their world's in peril, but it's this really kind of insular story about this, like, secret community and a murder, and it's not your just standard hero's journey kind of thing.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, cool. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, maybe discourage or add some skepticism for folks who are Minecraft fans but are curious about how this adaptation has worked out. But James, what have you been playing?
I've been a bad PC gamer, so not a lot.
James.
I know. We'll get to Battlefront a bit. That's most of what I played. But I also finished the Beginner's Guide. And Tyler, you reviewed this.
I did. I'm grumpy this week, apparently, because I'm like, Minecraft story mode, don't like it. Beginner's Guide, eh.
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about on the podcast. This is a game from one of the creators of the Stanley Parable.
Parabola? Stanley Parable? It's like an arc.
Stanley Parable. And
yeah, it's weird and experimental and first-person narrative. What is it? Yeah.
The framework is you have the creator of the – of I forget his name.
Davey.
Davey Reedon.
Yeah, Davey Reedon. He presents – he's talking to you, the player, right off the bat. And he says, here are these – many small games and worlds that were made by a friend I had called Coda. And we're just going to walk you through them bit like one by one through, you know, a course of several years and see how they evolve and see how they reflect on him as a person, and we'll kind of dissect them. And, you know, it's this weird kind of meta look at game development, and it's a bit of a character piece as well. without saying much, it gets... It does the Stanley Parable thing where it becomes more than it initially purports to be. It's short. You should all play it. It's like cheap, too. I don't know. What do you think about
it? $10. $10.
I don't want to spoil anything. I came away feeling very conflicted about it and disappointed. I don't want to say overall disappointed, but I think it was... better in the first half before it became very dependent on a lot of dialogue and writing.
So there's narration, but like, is it trying to screw with you? Is it funny?
It's just the creator. I forgot his name again. Jeez,
Davey Reedon.
Davey Reedon. He's literally just giving you commentary and interpreting like puzzles and level design from this supposed friend, and you know. Talking to you about who he might be.
So we're kind of meant to question the reliability of the narrator, but it's not in any way like the Stanley Parable where you're meant to sort of, your actions are meant to conflict with the narrator. You're just kind of walking as he talks.
You're an observer and kind of listening. You're almost being like lectured to.
You're listening and it's really, you just kind of walk forward, basically. Mm-hmm. I thought at the very beginning, like you said, it was a super interesting idea. I just liked the idea of like, snooping through someone else's creative
voyeuristic
projects that, you know, their experiments and their kind of, you can kind of see this Coda character learning kind of the elements of like making source engine levels as you go and like what, you know, Davey tries to get into his head and see what he's thinking. And like, that's just an interesting concept to like experience an artist's sort of early work in that form with someone narrating. And it's a game, so you're moving through it and kind of seeing that, but it starts to get pretty heavy-handed, I thought, toward the end, where it's just like, every level is like, we're getting closer to the point. Here comes the point. I'm going to really drive it home.
And there's the music starts to swell, and it gets, like you said, it gets a little heavy-handed.
It just becomes a little, like, I felt just too, like the mystery there, where it's like, I'm going through someone's files, starts to go away when it's kind of when the author, when Davey Reedon himself, his voice sort of starts to
telling, not showing
appear. Oh, you know, it's all telling. After a point in the beginning, it kind of is like, oh, look at this weird Counter-Strike level. Like, I'm curious about why he made this, and I'm like happy to hear what Davey Reedon thinks about why someone would make this. But it's just again, I don't want to spoil too much, but like. There is like a metaphor that's literally like a creative machine.
Yeah.
Like a machine moving, and it's like, oh, that's the creative machine that, and it's like, at that point, it's like, okay, I feel like I'm getting hit on the head with like insecurity and all the things that come with creation and the difficulties of like, you know, obviously Reedon made a really popular game in the Stanley Parable and had, he's written about, you know, how he felt sort of mm-hmm. afterward, and mm-hmm. and part of this game is
it feels like that
somewhat about the pressure to yeah. to deliver again, and it's also about sort of depression and insecurity and just yeah creative blockages and the question of, you know, whether you should create for external validation or just for yourself, or, mm-hmm. Or whether you can, or whether authorial intent matters, and that sort of debate. Like, there's a lot of stuff packed into it, so there's a lot of stuff you can take away from it,
yeah.
but it's not especially subtle.
No, and I think, like, that is when it was working best. I just kind of wished it was, literally as the trailer presents it, as, like, a folder, full of different games that you kind of click through.
Like her story almost.
Yeah, yeah, and just open up and explore and say, oh, wait, who is this? And maybe it would have been cool. I don't want to tell this guy what his game should be or should have been, but this is what I envisioned and thought I was getting into was he's just going to kind of let the training wheels off and, like, maybe point out, oh, this puzzle right. could represent this, or this could represent, you know, this design and color scheme and palette could represent that. But, and let me go and kind of, all right, I'm learning now and I'm kind of interpreting.
What was really interesting about her story is it made sort of that internal interpretation mm-hmm. of what you're seeing. That was sort of a lot of the interactivity was yep. like you yeah. piecing it together internally. No one was there kind of narrating for you. Oh, well, this is the part of the interview where she says it was really just like, you against this wall of, like, video evidence.
Well, it's a game
evidence.
That totally trusts you.
Yeah.
To find meaning in it and trust that you'll be okay without mechanics even, yeah. practically. You know?
This feels more like a sort of a diary. And what I liked about it was the sort of definitely the experimental nature of it. Like, what an interesting way to tell a story, like mm-hmm. narrating supposedly unfinished games, and then two, like, it is really sincere,
yeah,
and it feels heartfelt. It feels
don't want to undermine the message.
Yeah, but I definitely think like Reedon has some honest emotion in mm-hmm. it, like, and that's good. I have to appreciate that, and it made me feel something.
Oh yeah,
I felt feelings.
Well, that's good.
Sometimes yeah, those sure. happen.
Oh, rarely, despite your incredible skepticism, Tyler.
I try to avoid it, but it happens.
Well, okay, it's the Beginner's Guide. It's on Steam. It's $10. Out on October 1st. It's been out for 2 weeks now.
Give it a
shot. And, hey, very positive user reviews. So don't listen to us. We don't matter.
No, a lot of people had really emotional connections to it.
I like it.
I'm happy for them.
It's got the walking simulator tag, which is always a classic.
Oh, you just know.
But, no, yeah. I think there's definitely room yeah. for that kind of meta-reflection on, especially indie game development right now.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, think about what it's like for a lot of these folks that are making games in small teams and individually in an environment where more than 3,000 games will 3,000 games will release on Steam this year. Something close to that.
Horrifying.
And the most that have ever released on Steam in a year, by the way. That's about 8 a day. And some of them explode in popularity. You look at stuff like Ark. You look at stuff like Rocket League. You know, that just catch on like wildfire and make people millions of dollars. And games that are totally lost by the wayside don't get the word of mouth that they need, despite being great, despite mm-hmm. being things that people have invested years into.
Again, our fault. Damn it.
Failed you.
Yeah, and
but
sometimes...
That's got to be a psychologically grueling environment yeah, to work in yeah. for a lot of people. I mean, and in an environment where those people are your peers, and you have positive relationships with them, and you want to see them succeed, but maybe you don't, you know?
Yeah, or maybe you do, and you're young, and yeah. started as a modder, and I mean, like, I don't know how old Davey Reedon is, but he's young for
he's
someone
like our age,
as
yeah.
successful, and yeah, it's... I'm sure that's trying. Having that, that's what, when I sort of reviewed it and I criticized parts of it, I hope I was clear that I like the idea of a self-reflective, emotionally honest, sort of diary, sort of personal, exploration on Steam and elsewhere. I'm happy to see that kind of game. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not the only one, like that, but it is rare to have a game feel like a very or be very open about the fact that it's a personal expression from its author. I tend to feel pretty disconnected from the author of a game, mm-hmm. I guess. Rarely do games come out and say, this is me saying this, and this is the feelings. You know, you don't play a lot of memoir games, and I don't see why, and why not, so.
I guess... Yeah, I mean, like, Edmund McMillan's work is, like, maybe the closest thing, and even right. that is not very explicit. Okay. The Beginner's Guide. There it is. What am I playing? I'm playing Counter-Strike as usual.
Of course.
It's something you'll see it peek over Dota 2 now and then on the Steam stats. So, hey, it's
you get excited.
Number one and number two game. It validates my 900-something hours I put into this
game. You just
keep
it running all the time to give it one more?
No. I'm not that committed. But I've been playing a lot of casual, actually. I've sort of stepped away from competitive mode, which is like the 5-on-5,
right.
Like 60 to 90 minute, best of 30. And, yeah, just enjoying it as a, 10-on-10, open-ended pub match thing. And
you? Casual?
What?
I think, one of the things I'm really delighting in is I'm still discovering the joy of certain weapons in Counter-Strike. I had a lot of discomfort with the AK for really the past year or so. I feel like I'm like talking to my therapist right now, which is just weird. I'm talking about the AK-47 in Counter-Strike.
Tell me how the AK makes you feel.
But it's a hard weapon to use. It's in some ways, it's like the second most powerful weapon in Counter-Strike in a lot of ways, because it has that capacity to do one-hit kill headshots.
Right.
In all situations, unless you're shooting through a wall or something. And the AWP, obviously, has that ability with body shots, but it's harder to use. It shoots slower than the counter-terrorist equivalent, but it's cheaper. It's the terrorist mainstay, and yet I was like not really good with it. But in spending some time with it in casual, I've developed a lot more proficiency. That's been fun. I've sort of discovered its nuances and what it's good at, and just delighting in its ability to knock people out instantly. Which is really unique in a game that's about knockout, essentially, and really powerful. So that's been good. I've been playing tons of Dust 2. It sounds like really cliche and normal, but like I'd always like dislike Dust 2 and try to stay away from it at all costs. I'd always taken it off my map queue in competitive, just because I grew up playing it. I grew up playing it in Source, and it's just so overdone. But spending more time with it, you really become, you recognize how it has these discrete spaces that elevate and sort of showcase all the best parts of Counter-Strike in terms of risk-taking and uncertainty and like blind corners and using grenades and timing and like it's an impeccable map. I mean, there's a reason it's one of the most played, or perhaps the most played, multiplayer map of all time. So that's been fun. I'm going to continue to tinker around in there, but I'm sort of feeling the itch to start up XCOM again. I feel like I've got that. It sounds ridiculous because we're about to...
XCOM 2 was supposed to be out.
We're about to be playing Fallout soon. And stuff.
Yeah.
But I want that kind of like managing a squad of dudes and managing a base kind of experience. Maybe I'll go back to Xenonauts instead, which is really fun. But yeah, Counter-Strike.
I'm scared of Xenonauts.
It's hard.
It's graduate level XCOM. That's my description of it. It's a little more brutal... A little more kind of, the safeties are really, really off.
I'm going to have to talk to my advisor and see if I'm ready for graduate-level XCOM.
Yeah, the loans are ridiculous, too. So we didn't talk about Battlefront, which we have been playing, because we wanted to dedicate a whole segment to Star Wars Battlefront. The beta ended today. There were, three maps or something in there in the beta, a handful of maps?
There were two multiplayer maps.
And a survival map.
And a survival map.
The Horde mode thing, yeah, wave-based thing. There's been a lot of discussion about Battlefront. I've seen a lot of YouTubers posting about it, other websites posting about it. We've been writing about it, of course. Our colleague Sam Roberts over in the UK did a really nice video that I can actually bring up here, just showing off some of what he played. But I want to know, you guys spent a good amount of time with it. What do we think about Star Wars Battlefront? How does it compare to Battlefield games? How does it compare to the other slate of other shooters this year and next year?
I didn't spend a whole lot of time with it. I did jump in to sort of see how demanding it actually is, and I wrote a thing about how I think the recommended specs might be a little overzealous.
Yeah, they're asking for 16 gigs of RAM, which
you
is
don't
kind
need
of
that.
Funny.
But I did kind of play around in survival a bit, and the first thing I do in a shooter is just sort of like analyze what my weapon is doing. And what I found through tooltips and playing is that looking through a sight zooms you in, and that seems to be it. So I don't think you get any accuracy bonus for that. So kind of shooting from the hip is preferable. And I didn't notice a whole lot of loss of accuracy from movement. I don't know how much, if any. I'm trying to tell if the reticule like changes. It just kind of feels like everyone has a stick that shoots straight forward, beams at the same speed, and it doesn't seem to matter a whole lot if you're moving or zooming in. So like, it's really like it feels like homogenized between, you know, whoever you are, whatever you're holding. You do have your like special abilities, like the special like sniping thing.
Yeah, we should call that out more explicitly. We're actually looking at it right now. He's not holding a sniper rifle on screen, but on what is it, the 3-key? That is a cooldown based sniper rifle.
Yeah,
and that, as I understand, is the only way to snipe in Battlefront.
You do have that scope, but
yeah,
I mean, on a regular gun,
it's more of like an assault rifle thing. But there's no like discrete. Here is your fully equipped like sniper blaster rifle.
Yeah,
there might be in the final game. There might be an unlock of some kind. Like, sure, but that's pretty much it as far as we
can. So my feeling of the guns is that like I understood them in minutes, and there wasn't a whole lot to understand, which is kind of disappointing for me. Like I know they're just sort of like blasters that shoot little beams straight forward, and you know, it's not like you have bullet spread. It's not like and there's a sense that like they wanted it to be as absolutely like quick to pick up as possible. Like everyone has the same gun basically for one thing, so it's like there's not a whole lot of decision making, which
there's also no VOIP, we should say, on PC. Which is really discouraging.
Yeah, I mean,
kind of in line with other Battlefield releases, that's been an issue. But
I need VoIP.
You know,
want it?
I think the official Battlefront account put out a tweet today just saying, hey, you can use your preferred third-party solution on PC.
Which like, you can always do.
Yeah.
Okay.
No kidding.
But it completely takes out the possibility of talking with somebody in game and just sort connecting. Of discovering teamwork. Yeah. And like, yeah, you could say, well, how often does that happen in 2015, Evan? And teammates are more likely to blast like sandstorm over your mic and disrupt your experience. But
you know, I was saying to some extent, I think like the battlefields have gotten way too full of crap. Like,
yeah.
I don't need that many different freaking muzzles to, like, choose between. Like, the progression has just gone to this, like, circus level of I don't know, decision-making, where I feel like, I don't know what decision-making is like at a circus, but there's a lot of options, so the metaphor works.
Coop fire. Well,
here would be one of my biggest criticisms of Battlefield and even this style of game. I know there are unlocks, is that right? I mean,
yeah,
there's like battle cards. I can't remember.
Yeah, you have a loadout. You can see on the screen, but you of I think you get 3 cards, and one is a primary weapon, one's kind of like the secondary sniper, and the other is an ability of some kind.
Like you have a jump kind of.
Yeah, you can get a jump, or like get a temporary like ion enhancement that lets you blow through shields. Or
when I was playing survival mode, I had like this grenade launcher thing that shot 3 grenades.
Yeah. So, I mean, variability there.
But anyway.
Yeah. But I just think, okay, I don't think there's a lot of depth in Battlefield to begin with, if I'm comparing it to games like Counter-Strike, even like the upcoming Rainbow Six Siege. I think there's depth there. There's room for individual skill. There's like sniping is definitely a skill. Vehicle skills are definitely there in terms of helicopters. Battlefront takes a lot of that out to begin with. The weapons are shallow and all kind of homogeneous laser hoses, if I'm being really critical. The vehicles are spawn off random power-ups, so there's no opportunity for like, hey guys, let's coordinate and like do this with this vehicle to achieve this goal.
Yeah.
You just sort of stumble into them, and you even have to spend them within a certain amount of time once you pick up like a TIE fighter or an X-Wing or whatever.
And it's weird not being able to like climb into it and have that like connection of climbing into the vehicle, taking off and flying.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that would matter, but that really, really bothered me. I'm in the air.
They feel hyper disposable.
Yeah.
So, and I think DICE, you know, for all the good work that they do, this is a beautiful game.
Oh, it's amazing.
We should underline
that. So good.
It's incredibly cinematic. The sound is world-class, kind of unparalleled in a lot of ways. But their answer to depth is progression, ultimately, I think. It's like, well, we understand that we've made a very mainstream game, but in order to keep you in it, you're going to unlock a bunch of stuff, and we're going to create systems around that where you continually get these extrinsic rewards. We're like, you know, it'd be a lot cooler if we just made a really, really fun shooter that would inherently keep me in that experience. Mm-hmm. Like, Counter-Strike, yeah, it has weapon unlocks, and that's been a huge source of gross. And it's the reason the game is as popular as it is. So I'm kind of contradicting myself by saying this, but like, the reason I play Counter-Strike is to get better at Counter-Strike, to put myself in familiar situations on Dust that I know I can get better at and solve, and, you know, working against, like, I know what, like, a B-Rush feels like on, mm-hmm. on Dust 2, and I know how to counter that, and I get to see myself get better at that and manage certain tactics that are in an inventory that other players know as well. And
yeah,
this is so haphazard as an experience for me. There's a few things there that I like. I like the jump pack. I like the experience of, you know, we're looking at Hoth right now.
It looks good.
On our screen. Good. There it is. Great. Thanks, Anthony. So the jump pack, like the experience of jumping between trenches is really fun.
Yeah.
You're safe in a trench. You're safer in a trench. You're not as exposed to people that are kind of in the hills and whatnot. And you get to leapfrog basically in another moment of safety. That's fun. And it's a little bit hard to use. It's actually fun in the survival mode too. You're sort of platforming
between levels,
cliffs and stuff. But the vehicle stuff is so dumb. I mean, it's turrets, and the airborne vehicle handling is like flying a laundry.
It's bad. And the maneuvering keys are way up top by default.
That too. It's all like F1, F2 and stuff. Yeah. So, I don't know. A lot of fundamental problems here. Lack of VoIP is a huge sin for me.
Remember when we were first started playing PlanetSide 2, it had come out, we were really excited. I remember there was a moment where I think maybe you were down on the ground in a tank, and I was up in one of those Vanu hovering things, and I was kind of scouting ahead and, like, telling you what was up, because you're one tank, you were going to get in trouble if there were, say, two in front of you. And that was so much fun, and I think we barely got into any combat. I think we died as soon as we sort of encountered a bunch of people, but that kind of thing doesn't feel possible with the vehicle system. There just doesn't feel like any of that. It's just sort of like, it's like you're going on a ride every time you spawn. Like, you're going on the flying thing ride, or you're going on the stormtrooper ride.
It's incredibly disposable. I think I would go as far as to say there's almost no room for coordination, period, in what we've seen in Star Wars Battlefront. I know there's going to be more maps.
Right.
Maybe Endor will really surprise us, and that it'll be super tactical, and the vehicles will be implemented in a different way or whatever. But if you and I are playing together, what are our options for teamwork? It's like, I can spawn on you, and we can kind of, okay, we're going to attack this capture point, but inevitably one of us will die, like, very quickly.
You die very easily.
I mean, very easily. One of our friends actually works at EA, so, hey, he's good at the game. He had 70 kills and, like, 7 deaths in a match. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing he was operating a lot of turrets or whatever, but it's not a game that even has the enough permanence to sort of allow you to say, like, we're going to capture this point and even give you enough time to really feel like you've achieved that goal with somebody that you know.
Right.
For me. I mean, that was my experience. Maybe it'll be different maps. But
I think people are liking it. Some people are liking it for, I mean, you're seeing all these GIFs emerge of, you know, kooky things happening. And the same thing happens with, like, Battlefield. It's this big sandbox where, oh, you hopped out of the plane and did all stuff. But, I mean, you can't even do half of that in Battlefront. You can't hop out of your A-Wing and crash it into Darth Vader. You just die. And, you know, there's not going to be any room for real sandbox moments. Like, how do you experiment in a Battlefront when, I don't know, it feels like you die in, I don't know, 2 seconds. I died like 20 times per Hoth match. Everything's power-up based and it's sort of random. It feels like almost arcadey in a sandbox environment. And, you know, you can't climb into your vehicle and take off and, you know, coordinate with people. There's no sandbox there, despite it being like a sandboxy Battlefield game. I don't know. It's sad.
Yeah, I mean, I know at the outset when there was no footage of this game being circulated yet, and we're all speculating on what it would be, we were all very concerned that it would be too much like Battlefield.
Right.
We were like, oh man, I hope it isn't just a reskin. And, you know, you'll be hopping in Star Wars helicopters and jumping on roofs and sniping and shooting Star Wars RPGs at Star Wars tanks. But I kind of wish it had more of that.
Yeah.
You know, I will.
It's exactly right.
Battlefield is at its best when you feel like you have that kind of squad experience of me and my buddies, we're going to do this crazy thing. It's like this A-team kind of like, here we go.
Yeah, for all the crap.
We're all in this corner.
You know, yeah, for all the crap that Hardline got as being, you know, a Cops and Robbers reskin.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, just the mode, I think it's called, Hotwire, where, like, the control points are cars, and you have to keep the, it's like speed, you have to keep driving over a certain, Keanu Reeves is there, and you have to keep the car moving. So you get, like, you know, four guys in a car hanging out, you know, maybe one of them's got a grenade launcher or something, and you're trying to blow up the car that's chasing you. That feels really good and fun. Or maybe you're, you know, on the ground with a sniper rifle trying to snipe the driver out of cars, just doing kind of silly stuff like that that shouldn't work, and then you surprise yourself when it does. Or just trying to find the best path around the map, you know, when you're in a car. There was one map where people would just drive in circles in this sort of shallow water, and then you'd notice that the enemy team was doing that and be like, damn it, and then you'd have to get over there with a helicopter to blow them up. But you could make that decision to do that. You could go, damn it, I know they're over in that stupid spot where people drive in a circle, so I'm spawning into a helicopter. I got to take off. I have to sort of carefully pilot over there and try to hit them. Like, that was really fun. At least I think there were helicopters on that map. I hope so, or else I sound like I completely mixed up the maps in Hardline, but I stopped playing it after a while.
So let's you know, we're hardcore PC gamers, whatever. Let's take the devil's advocate perspective for a moment and say, like, this is an achievement. DICE built a mainstream shooter that's beautiful, sounds great, that people who don't play shooters can jump right into, feel empowered, have a Star Wars experience, not feel like they're getting bullied and that they're getting destroyed, that they can contribute to a fight. You know, the weapon handling isn't obscure and weird and hard to deal with. Isn't that great that they're making a shooter for the everyman, the every person that
I don't
wants to have a Star Wars multiplayer thing?
I'm kind of okay with that. It's on brand, right? I mean, it's on hashtag brand. It feels like Star Wars.
Star Wars is, like, messy and untactical to begin with, yeah.
Also, yes, I mean, obviously it's going to be on consoles and kind of marketed in the way that a big movie is marketed. And, you know, kids are going to get it home for Christmas or whatever and pop it in, and you just, they want to be a stormtrooper, right? Shooting blasters and getting kills and feeling like they're accomplishing stuff. And, like, I don't know, maybe the devil's advocate approach has something to it. Like, there is something to that. Maybe it's not for Counter-Strike Evan Lottie, but
I don't know. I just also don't feel like simplicity, you know, inherently leads to accessibility. I don't feel like, you know, most kids these days can build a damn calculator in Minecraft out of redstone. They can.
I don't know if most kids.
Every kid can build a computer in Minecraft. Wow. No.
No, I agree. Like, you know, trust your audience and give them, you know, it's kind of like.
Feels too safe.
It's the opposite of Tribes, right? Battlefront. Yeah. From what we've played. Like, where Tribes is like, you don't even really see vehicles too much. And if someone, like, is good with one, you're like, oh my God, you know, there's a freaking good pilot in this Tribes match. And, I mean, a lot of people who play aren't even good with spin fusers, which are hard as hell. I know I got rusty and went back and played on the new Ascend test server, and, like, it's friggin' hard to hit anyone in that game. And it's hard to know the skiing routes and be really good at that. But there are so many different things to be really good at. Like, I mean, I was just kind of, like, sheepishly doing engineer stuff because my skills are weak from atrophied from a lot of not playing. But, but this feels like sort of the opposite design sort of philosophy.
Yeah,
I don't know. We're also talking about, you know, something that we just played the beta of. Not that it's going to change drastically in less than a month toward release, but it'll be fun seeing the new maps. Like you said, Evan, the sound design is incredible.
There's a few moments I had where I was like, oh my God, Star Wars. There's, like, TIE fighters going over. You can see, like, unlike a battlefield, or as much, lasers just everywhere, like, in your periphery. There's explosions and familiar sounds. The AT-ATs are coming at you. It's quintessentially, like, very, very, very Star Wars.
So,
Star Wars as heck.
I'll mention this real quick, and if we can bring it up on the stream, that'd be amazing, Anthony. Thank you. I just missed this this bit of news from DICE that they're talking about the three new modes in Battlefront, and this actually does kind of address a little bit of what we're talking about, where the game feels very kind of, you know, impermanent, and just what you're doing moment to moment is kind of meaningless. Wow, that's mean of me to say, but hey. So one of these is cargo mode, which is apparently like a 6v6 capture the flag mode, and that sounds like it has the capacity to be more tactical, more like squad focused. Sure. Again, there's no VoIP, so good luck doing that in public matches and coordinating, but See, the other one we're talking about here is Droid Run, another capture point mode. Instead of static points, players need to capture droids and hold them for as long as possible to rack up points. That almost sounds like what you're talking about with the vehicle stuff in Hardline. I don't know if you drive the droids, maybe they follow you around or something.
That was the most fun mode in Hardline, so if they took a lesson from Hero that, Hunt. I'd understand.
Yeah, and there's also this asymmetrical mode. Hey, it's one of the big buzzwords of the past year. 7v1, or we were talking about an 11v1 game yesterday.
I look forward to playing that.
In which the group has to kill the Lone Ranger. So, I mean,
that's a weird crossover.
Mode. Yeah, none of the stuff is like completely weird and completely original, but it's at least smaller in scale in terms of what it's like 20 on 20 or something.
Yeah.
No, 24. Yeah, yeah, 20 on 20. I can't remember in Battlefront. So, who knows? I mean, mode announcements in general, like I tend to like just shrug at a lot because I think I see it as a game, a multiplayer shooter is especially like fragmenting itself further. And like, I'd rather you just like do two things and do them really, really well rather than trying to do five or six.
Yeah, they really like to announce a bunch of modes for shooters as if like the more they have is better. I know that sometimes a mode you didn't expect, like maybe Hotwire didn't expect to take off, can be cool, but like Tribes has multiple modes that are fine, but it's a capture the flag game, and I will always see it as that, right? Mm-hmm. And Counter-Strike, you can do different things, but everyone kind of knows what the competitive standard is. And I don't know, I feel like a game just needs to have one really, really great mode, and then everything else needs to be sort of icing, because otherwise you're just sort of a series of different rides that you can go on.
Get bored of quickly.
All right, so I'm really interested to hear what our viewers and listeners think. If you are watching the PC Gamer Show live as it's happening right now, let us know in the comments and later when we're answering viewer questions at the end of the show. Stick around. Love to hear what you guys think about Battlefront. If you jumped into the beta, apparently 9 million people jumped in. That's what EA was bragging about the other day. Of course, that's across all platforms, but that's still a really big number.
Star Wars.
So from Star Wars to Star Citizen.
Whoa.
Very different franchises, but we got to hear about the cast for the single-player aspect of Star Citizen this week, and it's pretty star-studded indeed.
Guys,
yeah.
Gillian Anderson retweeted us.
That was super cool.
Are we best friends now?
Get at us, Gillian.
Gillian Anderson tweeted PC Gamer. Let me see if I can find it real quickly. But
she embedded the tweet.
We're famous.
Tell me what you guys think about this cast announcement. We got Gary Oldman leading, along with Mark Hamill, of course, Mark Strong, Gillian Anderson, obviously, and John Rhys Davies. Yeah,
I mean, it's a list of names of people who are good at acting, right?
I don't understand. Like, okay, so the single player component of this is it like a full fledged campaign?
That's the idea. There is a
Squadron 42.
Yeah, it's like a Wing Commander style campaign.
Okay, and I've never played Wing Commander.
Well, it's a campaign where you go on.
Okay, missions. And like,
and you have voice acting, and obviously, or maybe they just hired them to, you know.
Because I wonder, I mean, that's a lot of big names, fairly big names. I just wonder to the extent we're going to see them in this experience that's already like big in so many other ways.
Yeah, it's so yeah. When Chris Roberts came before he had even announced it, and we talked, he sort of pitched it in two parts, like this single player campaign for people who specifically like single player, and then you can kind of take your accomplishments there and bring them into this persistent universe.
Okay.
So I'm not entirely clear myself, James, on how big this single player portion is, given the ambition and scope of the persistent universe, which seems like five games in itself, to then do a voice-acted campaign. I mean, that seems almost, I mean, for Battlefront, who knows how much that has cost. You know, they're not doing a campaign. And Star Citizen feels 10 times as ambitious as Battlefront, even before it does a campaign. So, it's exciting to have big actors, right? And that's something I think Chris Roberts, like, you know, he was doing the Hollywood thing for a little while. I think that's something he just has an interest in.
Right.
Yeah, it's sitting at $92.5 million right now, which, that's a large budget for a game. But still, like, you know, compared to something like GTA, it's maybe half.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, you think about the scale of what they're doing, it seems like, you know, there's been a lot of discussion around this lately and various controversies following Star Citizen that I'm not really interested in getting into right now, but it seems like they're, you know, you can argue about whether it's a well-managed product. You can argue about, like, oh, like, is it trying to be too much at once? But at the very least, I think they're being ambitious and, like, they're not just saying we're going to add in, like, a clumsy, like, very simple sort of tutorial-style single-player campaign. Yeah. It seemed to be full. I mean, this cast alone is a serious investment.
Yeah.
And I like that it's a throwback to the, you know, Wing Commander, cool. obviously, and that cast. Mark Hamill, obviously, one of the big stars in Wing Commander. John Rhys Davies was in there as well. I'm disappointed Malcolm McDowell isn't coming back. But,
yeah, I mean, they just keep putting out updates. And we watched recently some ships explode.
That nice.
was actually really cool because it kind of happened in this procedural fashion where, you know, you'd have like an electrical malfunction and then one, you know, one subsystem would catch on fire and then it would like catch another one on fire and it would sort of culminate in this final explosion, which is like the level of detail that they are going into with some of the just physics and systems in it is impressive already. I mean, there's still, you know, obviously, a lot of skepticism, but I don't know. They're announcing big actors, and it seems to be continuing, maybe not on schedule.
It gave me faith. Like it made me realize, like, well, as questionable as a lot of this, we don't really know what the final scope of this thing will be. Is it felt like a sincere push to say, hey. Look what we have, like, spiritually, especially for fans of the original games, or, you know, like, we're here, we're still doing stuff, we have real people attached to this, we have Gary Oldman's uncanny semblance yelling at people.
It's definitely an announcement that makes the game feel more substantial, more concrete, real, you know, legitimate.
It's no longer these, like, abstract ideas kind of, like, chain linked together, or at least... you know, verbally chain linked together. It's right. Like, all right, this is connective tissue.
So I've messed around in the hangar and sort of the combat simulation before, but we're getting some more accounts soon to kind of play with the social stuff that's happening. And
swing us some $10,000 ships too.
Yeah, I hope so. I didn't ask, but yeah. So we'll be kind of playing the updates as they come out.
Cool.
And, just talking about what is there and what we like about it, what we maybe don't like about it. But I look forward to it, and I'm hoping it's the kind of thing where as sort of they kept saying, every time I interviewed Chris Roberts, kept kind of saying, like, there's all this infrastructure work going on behind the scenes, and I hope that means that when all that sort of persistent world infrastructure is kind of functioning as it should, there will be a really fast kind of, you know, iteration on top of it. Mm. Maybe I'm being hopeful, and I don't really know. I don't know how development works. I'm not an engineer. But I just got the sense that they were, like, doing a lot of building that wasn't showy, and you can't really show people netcode.
No doubt.
And that, like, once that is all sort of comes together, then the modules of, like, FPS and sort of open universe spacey flying stuff will come into place in a more visible way that we can immediately kind of appreciate and enjoy.
Well, one of the questions we get most is what's going to be a game that pushes my system? I think Star Citizen really falls in that category.
Yeah.
Almost more than anything. I mean, armor's amazing up there for different reasons, but destructibility and like multi-crew ships and the scale and fidelity of the ships in general, just as like 3D models is pretty insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it feels like there's processing, like CPU, or there must be a lot of CPU load as well as graphics load if it's doing all this simulation. Although, I mean, who knows how much, you know, what new technologies they're using as far as, what's it called? Well, I don't know. DirectX 10 has a lot of features that might help. But, when I first, like, loaded up the hangar with a bunch of ships in it, they really hadn't done any optimization work, and I was, like, using, like, two Titans or something, and it was still, like, 45 frames a second. But there was no level of detail modeling or anything at that point. Whoa. So, It was just, yeah, rendering into the distance everything.
At full, yeah.
So crazy. But it'll push things.
It's exciting.
All right, so we can move on to our next topic, which is this interesting update
from
Dota 2 that happened last week. Half-Life 3 confirmed question mark. Say it with me.
Everyone say it.
So, a file. This happened after our show last week, so that's why we're covering it now.
Yeah.
Hopefully you didn't miss this news, because
it was fun.
God, it was everywhere.
It was fun.
What a wild day, I gotta say. Both in our office and elsewhere on social media, but a file named hl3.txt snuck its way in the latest Dota 2 update.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting stuff in there. What does it mean? Yeah. So
it was noticed by SteamDB.
Yeah, SteamDB on Twitter.
So I immediately went and downloaded Dota 2 just to make sure
the file
was actually sitting there. Mm-hmm. And it is like in a help folder. And the file is basically help documentation. Not written just as a text document, but like tooltips meant to show up. And there's a bunch of stuff that like references pretty explicitly Half-Life stuff. Combine turrets. There's stuff about
a lot of the stuff having to do with like squad control and AI, which as you recall in Half-Life 2 is a thing. Like in Act 2 or 3, you start being able to add people. It seemed like a feature that was sort of in the game, and they didn't really fully flesh it out, but it's still part of Half-Life 2. Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff that references spawning as well and enemy behaviors, and most interestingly was quests, mention of quests. And that might be some kind of insular, like, referential term for just talking to a person and getting an objective or something.
But some people are speculating that this actually means that Half-Life could be an open-world game, which is crazy to think about and crazy to imagine.
Or at one point was or something. Yeah. But either way, when you look at some of the stuff in Half-Life 2 and some of the environments and some of the squad stuff they were doing, it almost seems like they were going that direction, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
It definitely, I mean, I think someone pointed out that there was some actual potentially Dota-related sort of terms in some of the files, but there are definitely things that clearly have nothing to do with Dota. Dota doesn't have combine turrets, for one thing, as far as I know, unless that's coming in an update. It really feels like a source, like editor help document of some sort for someone who's building levels. The thing is, like, how on earth is Valve going to just whoops drop this file? Like that's so weird. And like
it's so weird.
To go all conspiracy, like God, they're just messing with us, teasing us. That doesn't make sense either. What a weird way to tease anything. So it's just confusing.
It's a mean way to tease.
I think you hit it right in the nose there. It's both. It's not like creative enough. It's not like it's not obscured whatsoever. I mean,
it's right there.
People have mined deeper things from Valve and other files.
This
and
is
other
a
games.
Plain like, text document.
It's just sitting. It's there's no like weird decoding you have to do or like weird community puzzle solving you have to do. Yeah, it's right there in the open. So in that way, it doesn't feel like a marketing gag or something. But at the same time, it's like right there in the open. You know, what does it mean? So it's either
silly mistake.
You know, Dota 2 or Source 2, some hint that like they're using old technology and sort of taking old pieces of code and trying to repurpose them in different games or an unannounced game, or it's like a really crazy, strange mistake by Valve putting it in there, which seems super unlikely considering how secretive and buttoned down they are in general.
It's totally possible HL3 stands for something completely different, and it's totally possible that some of these are just like reused tool text things from like Half-Life 2 that have gone into the new source editor. I don't know if it's still called Hammer or not for Source 2, but anyway, the Hammer editor is what I remember. So, it's possible that it means absolutely nothing. I did email Valve to be like, why did you put a file called hl3.txt with like references to this stuff in Dota 2's directory? And predictably, they didn't respond. Which will happen?
Maybe it's just a gesture, like a snide gesture, where they're just saying Half-Life 3 is not happening. We just don't care anymore. Just throw them in all the games.
I think it's definitely happening. I mean, we had the. I don't want to say confirmation. That's a very strong word. But speaking to Chet Falzek, he's like an ex games journalist.
Yeah, yeah.
Works at Valve now. Has worked on Left 4 Dead, one of the big guys on that, and other games. Confirmed out of Oculus Connect, I guess, that Half-Life 3 is not a VR game. You know, that's not to say, I guess, necessarily that it exists, but he's saying that...
If I'm remembering correctly, if someone asked, will Half-Life 3 be a VR game, and he said, no.
Yeah.
That was it.
Exactly. And then he, like, said it again when somebody challenged him further, and, you know, who knows what that means? We're desperate.
Clearly. I was saying in my... we do our highs and lows of the week every week on Fridays, where we write about our favorite things from the week and our least favorite. And I put it in my low, not because it, like, I was actually upset by it, by HL3.txt, but because I couldn't ignore it. Like, are you kidding me? You put HL3.txt into a Valve game update with stuff like that. Of course I'm going to have to now dig into it and write about it.
Right.
But it is getting just a little bit tiring, you know, searching for clues and rumors about Half-Life 3. Like, it became this internet joke that that just isn't going to go away until Valve says something about it, and no joke can really, like, the cake is a lie got pretty old after what, a month. This has been going on
years.
Since before that.
So long.
but I also don't want to be like the grumpy dude who's like, stop having fun on the internet, guys, because there is some fun to conspiracy theories.
It was fun. Like, there was a almost a nostalgic energy in the office. Like, oh, Half-Life 3.txt. What could it mean? We're just kind of like believing.
Well, believe, James. I mean, another strange coincidence. Half-Life 2 Episode 2 released on October 10th, 2007. So that's 8 years.
Mr. Dates,
if you multiply that by...
Well, no, don't do your freaking meme math on me. So that's 8 years ago, and this news was discovered when? I mean, that I think it was on the October 9th.
Whoa!
I mean,
like that.
You know, weird coincidence. But
Blood Moon just happened too.
Wasn't there something like at GDC?
No, it was on the 8th. Excuse me. The same day.
Whoa!
The same day.
Whoa!
There was a thing at, like, GDC where they were doing, like, they had a panel scheduled, like, for 3 o'clock on the
3rd. Oh, yeah. They were probably like, God damn it, how did we not see that?
Wow. Yeah, that is funny that it's the same day. I'm sure it's meaningless and the file's meaningless.
Nothing's meaningless.
Everything. There are no coincidences.
Anyway.
We are Half-Life
3. To close out this mention of Valve, Steam Link, Steam Controller, coming really, really soon. We can't really talk about it yet, but we do have them.
I saw it.
We're testing them. We'll be ready on our website, peacegamer.com, with lots of analysis and thoughts. If you're not familiar with Steam Link, it's basically the $50 streaming box to bring your PC gaming library from Steam to your big-ass television, using your actual PC to, you know, render, obviously, but, you know, encoding it and sending it across your network to your television in your living room or wherever you might have it. So looking forward to sharing some thoughts and analysis on that stuff with you guys very soon.
Exciting.
Finally, we want to close, before we go to our viewer questions here on Twitch, we wanted to talk about this game called Brigador that Tyler and I have been playing, coming out into Early Access October 16th. And I think the embargo's up tomorrow, so you're going to be posting a some sort of article-y, review-y thing.
You should write that.
Tyler. Excuse me.
I should get on that.
But it's, you know, this is something we saw at PAX recently, and we're both kind of really excited by it. Isometric vehicular game, really along the lines of a lot of the stuff that we saw in, like, the 90s on Genesis, stuff like Desert Strike.
I put a lot of Desert
Jungle
Strike.
Jungle Strike is another game in that series where, you know, fully isometric vehicle, shooting other vehicles and people on the ground and just blowing stuff up in every which direction. Yeah. And I've got a video we can pull up here for folks to look at who haven't seen it before, a trailer.
It looks nice.
And yeah, I think one of the things that excites me about Brigador is the aesthetic of it. I think there's a lot of good pixel work being done in PC gaming right now, but this is some particularly great stuff. It has a soundtrack that's really remindful of Drive. If you've seen that movie, total like 80s Cynthia. Neon, you know, driving a Camaro down the freeway kind of vibe, cyberpunky
rain
vibe.
On asphalt.
And in general, I really like the sort of, I don't know, cyberpunk. I hesitate to just overuse that word over and over, but there's sort of a junkiness to the vehicles. They feel sort of cobbled together in a mercenary kind of way. You're looking at like a Walker right now, but there are other vehicles that just sort of feel like some dude put them together in his garage, and they're really like unnecessarily dangerous and like not built in a factory. You know what I mean? There are other kind of, and there are kind of different movement dynamics in the vehicles, which is nice. So it, the way the game is built right now, you pick a vehicle type, like a chassis, basically. Right now we're looking at what seems like a hover tank that can strafe side to side. There's like a motorcycle type vehicle, as I recall, and a couple different walkers and a tank and like a very tall walker as well.
Yeah.
So you pick one of those vehicles. You pick two weapons, like a primary and a secondary that might be like a Gauss rifle or like a mortar type weapon, and then like a laser machine gun, or there are other guns in there. And then there's like a special ability like a cloak or smoke grenades or whatever, EMP, I think is the third one. And you're roaming these, you know, again, like very like 32-bit era, like 16-bit era isometric maps with a lot of destructible like oil tanks and barriers and like, you know, blockades and cars and debris, and they're like civilians roaming around, and it's all randomly generated, I guess, in terms of how many enemies and which, I guess you can actually pick which map you're placed on.
I think, I don't know, because I've been playing it a lot, and it seems like there are enemy placements. I'm not entirely sure if any of it is procedural or what is, but I've definitely noticed sort of encampments that are there every time.
Okay.
But you kind of start in a different spot on the map, depending on which map you choose, and you do have to like progress through some of the maps, which is, as we've been talking about, Evan, really, really hard.
It's super hard.
It's probably the hardest game I've played this year.
What kind of hard is it, though?
It's punishingly hard. It's sort of, I mean, it's very like early access hard. I don't know why. That's not even a term. Just sort of like, hey, we've invented this game, and it's conceptually cool, but we're still figuring out the scaling and balancing and tuning of how many dudes should be in the environment, and how often, and how strong should they be, and like how much should your health regenerate? Because it's sort of a you progress. I mean, there isn't really sort of a campaign built in the game right now. But as far as like I can tell, their intention is like you go on a mission, and then you go on another mission, and you just like keep going, or you see as far as you can get, basically, that kind of structure.
Arcady.
But you carry over your hit points right now on your mech, and you're really
and your ammo. Yeah,
so you're really fragile in general, like.
Between levels or playthroughs?
Between levels. Okay. So if I do get through the first level, which is not all that common, I go into the next one with fewer hit points and potentially low on ammo if I didn't grab ammo on my way out.
And it's harder?
Sometimes you can start a map and kind of have some time to like use your stealth and maybe, you know, attract some enemies and kind of lure them away and blow them up. But other times you just kind of drive right into a hornet's nest. There's so much complexity to the pixel art. There are like multiple states of like rubble that you can like get stuck in and have to sort of destroy or will slow you down, and complex, you know, buildings and then really fast enemies and slower enemies that have long range, and trying to dodge bullets and hit with some really interesting weapons. Like, I really like the howitzer.
Yeah.
Because when you'll notice if you're looking at the video there, when you move out your mouse to aim, you also have a vertical sort of arc going on. So you can actually fire the howitzer over walls to hit things. Cool. But it's not easy to score a hit, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like most of the walkers, for example, and even some of the tanks have actual tank controls, like what you'd associate with, like, think of like Resident Evil, where you hold D and you turn to the right, right? You don't strafe, and that's hard to do in that isometric camera at the outset. Like, it's definitely something I've gotten better at over time.
And then you're the top of your sort of chassis moves independently to aim.
Yeah, you have torso rotation, I guess I should say, for like our MechWarrior fans
out
there.
So like your legs are your legs are turning the top. So, and with sort of the density of the art, and it can be a little tricky to, like, get a handle on where your legs are pointed. Though I've had the most success with the heaviest armored walker. I don't know about you, Evan.
I think so.
You can play it as, like, a speed sort of a strategy, a speed advantage, where you kind of pop in and get done what you want to do and then run away. But going for a lot of armor is the only way I've had really success.
Yeah.
So there's like three objectives you can accomplish to finish a map. Basically, there are three like boss characters or vehicles that have like eyeballs on them. If you can kill all three of those, you can destroy three orbital guns, I think they're called, or you can just kill like a certain number of bad guys. I mostly have succeeded at killing the bosses, but the orbital guns are actually marked on the map, so yeah, that should theoretically be easier.
I think this game has a lot of potential. I'm really interested to see kind of what they layer in terms of scripting, storytelling, structure. I think that's kind of what it's lacking right now. It's a very interesting sort of play set, so to speak, where I had this like cool action figure and I have this like really cool diorama that I can blow up and run through, and it's gorgeous and it's really granular, and you know, my action figure again is like simulated in some interesting ways, like what we're talking about with torso rotation, and like the, you know, like one weapon will rotate more slowly than the other as I swing left, yeah, and right. It's not an arcade game. It's not like Asteroids where I'm just running around blasting stuff and it's like really, really, you know, sugary and frivolous. There's that level of detail where I can like duck behind cover and fire and then retreat back, and you know, those moments are really fun. So I'm interested to see how they kind of elevate this game after its early access release on the 16th, which I guess is Friday.
Yeah, soon.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. I think this, along with Vermintide, which we had on the show a few weeks ago, and
so that's coming out soon, huh?
Oh, crap.
And Hard West, which Tom streamed last week, which is sort of an XCOM Western turn-based strategy game. I think those three would be my picks for dark horses going into this holiday season, stuff that you're not really expecting, you know, stuff that's kind of flying under the radar, but has a lot of potential to be different and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Fallout palate cleansers.
Terrific. So, yeah, thanks for watching the show today, guys. Those of you who are tuning in on Twitch, this is your moment to get your questions answered and have your comments heard about Battlefront, what we've been talking about, and even stuff that we haven't been talking about. If you're going to hit us with questions about hardware or PC building or games of 2016, that's something we're starting to ponder here at PC Gamer, but we'd love to hear that from you. In the meantime, you guys have any questions for our readers, each other, while we wait for those to populate
James,
in the stream?
Tell me, when was the last time a game made you cry?
Oh, actually, Kentucky Route Zero, Episode 3.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a crybaby though. I'm like easy. I'm very sentimental and very easy to get to cry.
You're like, well, earlier I was playing Battlefront and I got killed 3 times in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And I sobbed.
But Kentucky Route Zero, there's a song in there, and I was just like so moved. I felt everything all at once.
It's a very moving game. It's a great game. It takes a long time between episodes for Kentucky Route Zero, so
I'm okay with
it. If you're the kind who hates to like wait for an episodic game to finish, you might want to wait on that one because it's like, what, 6 months between episodes?
Yeah, yeah. And it's not like you're dying to know what's happening. It's these weirdly like kind of, I don't want to say disparate, but magical, hazy adventures. I don't want to say magical either.
Magical realism.
Mundane magical realism.
Mundane magical realism. Yeah. Wow. Magical mundanity.
Whoa.
Wow. So... Anyway. All right, we have a couple questions here.
Oh, boy.
Do you guys think EA will ever get back their spine to release games on Steam again?
Oh.
Do I think EA will ever release games on Steam again? I think if they found themselves struggling on Origin, then they would, but...
People still buy them on Origin.
I don't foresee them necessarily needing to. I don't know. I'm... okay with it. I like having all my games in one place also. It's annoying. I have to load up a separate launcher when the one you always... You know, Steam's always open on my PC, obviously, because most of my stuff's there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's their prerogative. I don't...
Not to be cynical about it, but I have to imagine, like, one of their big estimations is, okay, what is the cost of a system like Origin, which is probably not insubstantial. It has staff.
Right.
It has infrastructure. Servers. It has customer support. Like, this is all really big stuff that Steam... kind of offers by itself, but what they lose in going to Steam is essentially 30% of their profit.
Yeah.
You know, that's generally, you know, that's like the industry standard take. If you're on iTunes or whatever, if you're on Amazon or something, like that's what you're losing if you're selling a game or something digital. So you know, basically does the cost outweigh, and then also the audience of Steam, you know, being millions more people than it is on Origin,
do you make it up?
So I don't know. I think it would be surprising if EA jumped off the Origin boat now, especially as Battlefront's coming, obviously. But I think they'll stick with it minimum, like, 2 more years. I can't see them deviating at this point. It's, they put a lot of investment into it. They put a lot of resources into it. It could be a good system. Like, I think they you know, I'd love to see them be more aggressive with sales and stuff like that and compete in that way.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, they're obviously way, way behind in terms of features with Steam, which has had about a decade to develop and do a lot of interesting stuff there. Trading cards, how exciting on Steam.
Oh, I can't wait until Origin trading
really
cards.
Missing.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But, no, I don't think Origin's going away anytime soon. I think we'll continue to have to play those games on Origin, which... it's an inconvenience, but
it's a minor.
I think ultimately more platforms, so to speak, you know, more whatever you want to call these, you know, Steam and Origin and otherwise benefit us. We want competition. You know, however kind of minimal that competition is, we need to support it here and there when it's good for us.
Yep.
All right. Other questions. Let's see. Is wondering. So what other games are there that are similar to Mech Commander, Brigador, Battletech, anything else? I have trouble thinking of stuff. Jeez. I mean, Mech Commander is one of my favorite games of all time, honestly. Really, really good, you know, FOSS Interactive game from the early 2000s. It's not turn-based. It's like a real-time tactical game, isometric, similar to Brigador, but not as action-based. Like, you're just targeting mechs and telling them to shoot, and they shoot. I really think that's part of the reason I'm excited about Brigador, because there hasn't been this kind of experience where you're an isometric vehicle on the ground, roaming this environment, shooting stuff. I don't know. I have trouble thinking of one. There might be one or two out there.
Nothing comes to mind.
Fido's wondering about the Steam controller, whether its D-pad is better, worse, or the same as the Xbox One controller. Well, here's the thing. Well, we can't give you, you know, too many explicit impressions on the Steam controller, but hey, it actually doesn't have a D-pad, so there's a start. it has an analog stick. It has, you know, that sort of button diamond, the ABXY that we're used to, and then it has the two trackpads. So I don't know if that's what you're referring to.
The trackpads do click down, don't they?
They do. Yeah, of course you can use it as a D-pad, but the size of it is really big relative to the Xbox 360 D-pad. It's you know, maybe 30% bigger or something in terms of area. So I don't know. I think obviously one of the things it'll benefit from is those user-created controller profiles where folks can sort of set what buttons are assigned where. I'm really excited to test out the rear buttons, the sort of like under...
Like paddles?
Paddles, I guess you'll call them, like... on the inside grips, basically, and see how that plays out in like single-player shooters, for example, and whether that holds up better than a different trigger.
So,
I think there's potential there. I have no sense of how it's going to handle like 2D platformers and whatnot. I think that's certainly a context where a lot of people prefer a D-pad, so we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think fighting games will... Well, I don't know. I haven't tried it.
Be interesting.
Yeah.
We'll do a...
Okay, question. If you could buy one game this Christmas, what would it be and why?
Jeez.
From Box 3D2. I mean, Fallout is the tempting, obvious answer for me, because it's sort of like this infinite, massive sandbox I'll easily be able to put 50 hours into and lends itself to, you know... But, you know, again, just to sort of surface some skepticism on Fallout...
And what else is coming out?
No one has played Fallout 4 in the press.
No.
There are zero... hands-on impressions on Fallout 4 in the press, and that might change magically in the next month before it comes out. I think it's out.
Month. Oh my god!
Is it exactly November 13th?
November is it 11th? November 11th?
I guess it is the 11th.
So less than a month?
November 10th. Yeah. So less than a month. Maybe Bethesda will surprise us and like come to San Francisco and give us an event. That could happen.
Hey Bethesda, what's up?
But at this rate, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. It doesn't look like anybody's going to be able to play Fallout 4 and write about it before review time, which is like legitimately concerning. That's very, very, very
it's
rare.
It's not what we're used to.
Especially for a big game. We're usually able to sort of say, oh, this is exciting, but this issue is sort of concerning. So,
I think, yeah, typically when that happens, we think this game is probably going to have problems. But it's Fallout, and historically, Bethesda, you know, they're great. So, I mean, a little more faith in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard to just blindly lean on it. What else is coming out? Vermintide, I'm really excited about.
Yeah, we played some of the beta. That was good. Rainbow Six Siege is exciting. You know, beginning in December, I'm going to plan to put a lot of time into that.
Rebel Galaxy is coming out this month. It looks on the 20th.
Yeah.
I believe that looks interesting to me. StarCraft II Legacy of the Void, I'm not that interested in StarCraft II, I'm afraid. Based on the beta, which I haven't played that much of, but you guys have, I don't know. Battlefront doesn't seem like a whole Christmas week break from work distraction.
Not for me.
That doesn't seem like enough.
I feel like I could, I mean, I feel like I could totally skip Battlefront and miss nothing.
Me too.
Ouch.
Be plenty of Star Wars in the future. We're going to get so much Star Wars stuff, guys.
Here's a good question. I think this might have been something we talked about last week with our guests, one of the creators of Thief.
Yeah.
Really exciting. System Shock 2 we worked on. Mm-hmm. Paul Neurath, I think is his last name pronounced. REI Bob asks, Steam is making a stealth game sale. This is on Steam right now, if you're curious. How do you see the future of stealth games? With Metal Gear making a big jump towards a more mainstream audience without losing essence, and the success of indies like Marvel the Ninja and Invisible Inc.
Well, this is a whole other conversation, but I don't think Metal Gear Solid is a stealth game. But
ooh,
yeah,
that's fight me. I hope it's not open world like systems that are strictly like, I don't want to say strictly, but they encourage both styles of play, because to me that's why I don't think it's a stealth game. I like stealth games that make you feel like you're diving or you're going somewhere like deep into behind the walls of some enemy base or fortress. And I think Dishonored, Deus Ex, those kind of games make me feel like I'm really just digging slowly through like enemy defenses and getting deeper and deeper into some place I might have a hard time getting out. And I hope with Deus Ex and Dishonored 2, whatever that ends up being, like we see some good representation of like that kind of stealth gameplay. But
it's tough for that sort of AAA stealth game, so to speak. Dishonored is probably the best example in recent memory, where I think as the budget gets larger, those games and those publishers are really, they're more insecure about making it fully stealth. You know, very like 80% focused on, let's say, like stealth and evasion as the main conceit of the game. They feel like they need to add in a lane, so to speak, that players can run down where they can just shoot everything if they want to.
Yeah.
Because that's not every player wants to play a stealth game. I think
that's how I play.
Yeah, certainly. So
it's fair, I guess.
I don't know. One of the things I'm really hoping to see more of is more creative and just higher fidelity implementation of stuff like vision. I still think that like that stuff is super abstracted in terms of how it's represented in the UI, where I have to see this like little halo or something that tells me in Metal Gear that, oh, I've been seen. I use this phrase all the time. I hate playing games through the UI, especially big sandbox, fully produced games. And, you know, I don't have a better solution to that. I don't know what it is, but
it's difficult.
I'm sure
maybe it's VR.
There's somebody smarter than me out there that has a sense of what
the reason like stealth is so dependent on the UI, and sometimes that can be really good, like Mark of the Ninja, where you need all that information, right, about who can see and hear you, is because especially in a 3D game like Metal Gear, you just don't have the spatial awareness to get a sense of, like, I can tell if someone were, like, over there, I could tell if they could see me right now, just instinctively, obviously.
Without, like, a giant exclamation point over their head, really?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
But honestly, like, playing Metal Gear Solid 5, there are moments where I'm like, if I cross this path, I'm not actually sure if this guy can see me. Like, I can't quite see his line of sight. Mm-hmm. I can rotate the camera around and try to tell. I don't know if he has, like, super, super weak vision or
the game freezes time, or not freezes, like slows it dramatically, and there's a massive like sound dampens and you only hear like your heartbeat or something, and you have an opportunity to kill someone every time you're spotted. Is that a stealth game? Oh, you can't?
No, you can, but if you do, it's just not fun. It's absolutely bad.
I think some people had fun.
But I mean,
I'm not that hardcore into stealth.
It's a huge, you know, like you said, there's no spatial awareness. Like, you just spot it and start getting shot at. Like,
I just wonder if VR can help at all with just like,
it might be able to,
understanding where I am in relation to other things in space, other people. Cause it's tricky. I mean, that's why in some ways I kind of like I like first person shooters, but in some ways third person shooters feel more like I understand, you know, because you have a peripheral vision basically in a third person shooter, and I feel like it's almost a metaphor there for how people actually see, whereas first-person shooters can be kind of narrow, depending on your FOV.
All right, Colin has a nice comment about stealth games. I just want to see a reskinned version of Alien Isolation, but office-themed, so you have to get from your desk to the photocopier and back without being caught by a coworker. I think that's a great idea, Colin.
Because you don't want to talk?
Yeah, presumably. Yeah, that's the equivalent of being caught, being stuck in conversations about the weather and stuff like that.
Oh, that'd be a good idea.
So that's the combat, is the conversation.
Yeah. Here's quick a question. Here's a question from Ben 14715. Which do you think will sell more, Deus Ex Mankind Divided or Cyberpunk 2077?
Oh, we don't know anything about Cyberpunk yet.
Yeah, very little. There's only been kind of teasery trailers, but yeah. I really think I think CD Projekt is going to be able to transfer that audience from The Witcher. I think they've really established themselves as a massive player in PC gaming over the past few years. Witcher 3 sold 6 million copies in the first week or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the first couple days or week. Forgive me. Yeah. But a ton. And I think there's an immense amount of trust there in terms of the level of detail that CD Projekt builds into its games, the level of polish. The games are always like ready at launch. Yep. There's no like big issues with them technically. There's, you know, they're PC gamers first and foremost. They're building that game for PC, and I think if they can sort of tell that story in terms of this is Witcher but sci-fi, you know, not to simplify it, if they can do that, they'll have a real success on their hands. Assuming, I think a lot hangs on the story, like who are you in this universe?
Yeah.
What sort of cyberpunk universe is it? Is it? I mean, I know it's based on an old pen and paper cyberpunk game, but. Yeah, really interested to see. It's. I think it's in the same way as The Witcher. It's an opportunity from what they've shown in the initial imagery and marketing that this is an opportunity to do kind of dark, you know, gray at the very least. You know, playing around with ethical situations and characters and tech. You know, you're sort of an outcast in The Witcher. Obviously, you're this kind of unique character with a lot of stigma around them, and I think there's a huge opportunity if you look at stuff like Blade Runner of like, are you or aren't you a machine?
Now you're a techno outcast.
I think, you know, I guess when you start to look at all that stuff, there's some opportunities for overlap and similarity actually between The Witcher and this game.
I totally welcome that. I would love another.
Your name is Geralt 2.0.
Oh, nice one, Tyler.
I also play fantasy RPGs and fantasy games in general. I don't really like fantasy.
Ditto.
I like sci-fi much more. So the idea of a Witcher, you know, as kind of you're positing a cyberpunk Witcher, is pretty appealing to me. Because I'm a Mass Effect fan, not really a Dragon Age fan. I mean, I have liked Inquisition. I haven't finished it because it's a good game. But dragons and swords and stuff, nah.
It's for nerds.
Nah. Give me
dorks.
Give me hacking and robot arms and stuff.
As far as what'll sell more, I don't know. Right? Do we know? I mean, like, Deus Ex is established. It's an established name, but
it's impossible to say.
But it's going to be, I don't know, I'm glad they both exist.
Okay. A few more questions. Please hit us if you have any final inquiries about PC gaming in these last few moments. Verandil wonders, why do Paradox Interactive not get more love from the wider gaming community? Despite broadening their range recently, are they still too pigeonholed with overly complex games? I love Paradox. I love what they're doing in terms of, you know, in my time here, they've really grown from just sort of the folks that make Crusader Kings and Hearts of Iron and like hardcore interface driven crazy stuff, like historical grand strategy games, into the folks that make Magicka and you know, other similar experiences that they're playing with there. So it's been fun to see them broaden their portfolio, so to speak. I don't know. I think, you know, the thing that's probably separating a game like Crusader Kings, which was plenty popular and did really well for the type of game that it is, from something like Civilization, which is fully mainstream, like constantly in Steam's top 15 played or something, is interface and is just the visual aesthetics of it. You know, as much as we love hearing about the stories players can tell in a game like Crusader Kings and Dwarf Fortress, you know, that's the reason that they haven't really caught on and they're not being played by tens of thousands of people in any given moment. Yeah. They're not really much to look at on screen. You know, it's hard to parse. It's hard to decode. The game doesn't explain itself. I mean, you could say Civilization has some similar issues, but I think they have a great attention to sound and detail. Firaxis, more than anything, they know how to make a beautiful board game, essentially. Like, I think that's their background. That's kind of, I know those guys love to play board games, and they know how to sort of make every piece in the board and the board itself visually interesting and fun to look at.
There's a good sound, too. Even if you have no idea what you're doing in Civilization, you can kind of make things happen and feel okay about it, or at least feel like you're having an influence. I've dabbled in Crusader Kings, too, and it's just, yeah, I mean, it's less user-friendly, and that stuff is really, really, really difficult to do. Costs a lot of money, takes a lot of talent, especially with, like, the level of simulation going on behind the scenes. Yeah. It's
daunting.
Yeah.
I think that's probably just sums it up. Crusader Kings looks daunting, and until you get
simply
it,
put.
Is kind of daunting. I mean, I won't make a judgment call as to whether it's a more rewarding experience than more mainstream games, but, you know, I played a bit of it, and the people I know who really love it would probably say so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but Paradox
Magic is fun.
Great. I guess I'll put this question back to us. I saw some comments on it after we were talking about it. Do you think Fallout 4 will bomb, so to speak?
No.
It will not. No. I don't think we're expecting that at all. But, I mean, yeah, let's kind of dig back a little bit into the fact that no one's played it yet.
Right.
What that means. The state that other Fallout games have released in, New Vegas, Fallout 3, not perfect at launch. That's a little bit concerning. No. But ultimately, like, what have you guys thought of what you've seen so far? I think one of the things I'm not crazy about that I know about Fallout 4 is your companions can't die.
Oh, hey, it bothers me.
And I know that, hey, you know, these are going to be fully voiced, like, fully fleshed out characters that you can build.
You can't kill thousands of dollars worth of voice work, Evan.
That's really expensive. But that's, for me, that's the crux of the appeal. It's a do-anything experience.
It's
like,
a role-playing game.
Like, yeah. I know there are barriers and there are boundaries within that, but what's more interesting and valuable, the scripted written experience of me and this like deputy character that I'm given and sort of walks around with me, or the one time that I brazenly walk into an abandoned supermarket and he gets killed and it's my fault?
Yeah.
And I, like, those are equally valuable and important to me. I would love, there'll be lesser like squad guys and companions that can die. Add something to it. Maybe your base will play into this.
Yeah.
But if everyone has the same experience with the same character, I mean, like,
yeah,
that's less fun over time. Like, I like these games because I'm looking forward to sharing those stories with you guys and talking about that stuff.
Yeah, the most exciting thing to happen in a game is when it sort of allows for an action that you did or something else in the world did that you didn't know could happen.
Yeah.
That surprises you in some way. Saying like, oh, I didn't know I could do that is always fun. But, I mean, again, none of us have actually played it. So, you know, is it you're saying maybe there's lesser companions that, I mean, we don't know necessarily. I don't know. I haven't actually read the news about this. So, because I do find that kind of surprising. Because what always like surprised me in Fallout 3 was when I would get into a fight with a shopkeeper or something and be like, oh, yeah, I forgot I can just kill people who bother me.
I'm really curious also how the voice player character is going to play out.
That really bothers me.
Oh, really? For me,
yeah.
You know, Fallout's character is its world, period.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it's the style of the game that it is the character. It's the way weird, like, Neo-50s music over your radio clashes with these insane radioactive monsters and insane sci-fi weapons. Like, that moment is Fallout to me more than anything. And part of me is excited. Like, I don't think the silent narrator has added anything in Fallout historically. I don't think it takes away anything. Mm. So it's going to be a question of, just how does that change experience? What's, you know, if we think about stuff like Mass Effect, if we think about like the, at its worst, I feel like my character doesn't represent me, right? I feel like Shepard in Mass Effect is like too angry or too militaristic more than I am, or like too macho or bullish or something. And I feel like there's going to be a possibility for those kind of moments where your character's maybe, he has like his sense of humor is a little bit too bright and doesn't like represent your experience and where you're at. So we'll see where that goes.
And imagine if your Skyrim character was yammering away.
Oh, that would be like, well, that's very weird. Very weird to imagine.
That
be weird?
It drives me crazy because I go in like deliberately built. It's as dorky as I get, but I go in deliberately like building these elaborate backstories for my person and like how they talk and all these things. It's like it's akin to reading a book, and I develop a voice for a character I'm reading in my head. Like I this guy is going to be crazy and only use explosives, and he does this because I don't know, whatever. And he has a mousy voice, and he's off-putting. You know, like instead of "Hi, I'm Joe Schmo from Fallout World." Boop-a-doo, you know.
Have you ever auditioned as a voice actor?
It's I, the Call Pit
Me Bethesda.
Boy.
Call me Fallout 5. What's
I
up?
I mean, the Vault Boy. I mean, which one is the thing on your arm, and which one is the playful guy?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it does worry me too, because you could end up where it's like, oh, he's kind of a Nolan North style character who's kind of like got bravado, but you know, some kind of
black
smarmy
humor.
Or it could end up being like a really straight faced. You know, I'm a Fallout guy in the Fallout. Or it could be like a really great performance that's really like nuanced and funny, but like you said, also not how, like, you gave your character weird stats and like made your character this kind of weird weakling who's like good at, you know, really specific things, and like this voice just doesn't represent your character. So
that's tricky. Well, I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see how these two
games
are...
It's not
going to
flop, though.
It's going to be fine.
It's going to sell.
It's going to be fascinating to see how these games are received, both Fallout 4 and Battlefront. I think I'm really, really curious to see how our colleagues in the gaming press and elsewhere evaluate this stuff. Because on one hand, hey, Star Wars, it's back, and it's beautiful, and it sounds great, and it's super high fidelity.
It's like you're being held up by it. Hey, Star Wars!
It's really expensive, but it's...
I will be excited.
But it's super shallow, but does that mean, you know...
We'll see. We'll play some more modes when it comes out and try everything out. We'll have a review of that. Now I'm just thinking like, oh my god, we need to review that.
All this work I have to do.
We got a review
coming up so soon.
And I got to write about Minecraft and Brigador. It's exciting. So much stuff.
It's fun.
New games.
Well, thanks for watching this week, guys. And thanks for listening over iTunes or your podcast delivery vehicle of choice. I'm Evan Lottie. That's Tyler Weil. That's James Davenport. See you guys next week at the same time, 1 o'clock Pacific, on twitch.com/PCGamer. Thanks for watching.
All right. Bye-bye.